From Toronto, Canada, home of igloos, polar bears, and flying hockey pucks, this is Inside Movies and TV.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We are tonight's entertainment.
Hello there, everyone. It's time for another episode of Inside Movies and TV. This is show number 61 for June 7th, 2009. Thank you for joining us once again. My name is Jamie Hosking, and sitting across from me, as always, is my co-host Aaron Shaw.
Hello.
And also, we've got, once again, as a special guest, Dennis Cucciarelli. How's it going, Dennis?
It's going fine, Jamie. Good to see you again.
Yes, absolutely. We've got lots of great stories to talk about this week. And a couple of sad ones as well. The first one being, let's just make a special note to mention the passing of a fantastic actor and pretty much a living legend, that of David Carradine. The noted character actor, film and television star, he lent his persona to more than 100 films, unfortunately was found dead in Thailand while on location for the film Stretch. Police say the cause of death so far was suicide by hanging. He was 72. Carradine was born into a family of thespians. His father was noted star John Carradine. His brother was Bruce Carradine, and he was the half-brother of Keith and Robert Carradine. Though he came to prominence as the star of TV's Kung Fu and Kung Fu, The Legend Continues, Carradine was a key player in works by some of cinema's greatest directors. One of his earliest starring movie roles was in Martin Scorsese's second feature, Boxcar Bertha, and he also top-lined the works by Hal Ashby in Bound for Glory, Ingmar Bergman in The Serpent's Egg, Walter Hill in The Long Riders, and most recently, Quentin Tarantino as the title character in Kill Bill 1 and 2. In addition to his work in westerns and martial arts films, Carradine was a reliable villain in a number of B-pictures. He was a four-time Golden Globe nominee and was nominated for an Emmy for his work on Kung Fu. He is survived by his wife, Annie Bierman, and his two daughters, Callista and Kansas Carradine. So a very sad story there, and one that I'm sure everybody knows about because of the unfortunate revelation of all the details so far surrounding his death that have made it kind of a mystery still. Unfortunately, you know, he was seeing what looked to be kind of a career renaissance, kind of like what's happening with Mickey Rourke and those sort of actors.
It was funny that this, when the story broke, was ironic. That's the word I'm looking for. Ironic, because I randomly decided on Wednesday to watch Kill Bill Volume 1, and then the next day I hear he was found dead. But I grew up with Carradine when I was watching Kung Fu, The Legend Continues. It was on for 4 years, filmed here in Toronto. And it was a good show, and I still watch it in reruns when I can, even though I've seen every episode, I don't know, 5-10 times. But yeah, he was definitely on a resurgence of sorts. He got some fame, newfound fame with Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. Great job in it, very different from Kane from Kung Fu, who he played in Kung Fu. And just, you know, a sad story to a good life. I didn't know he did a movie with Martin Scorsese.
I agree, Aaron. David Carradine contributed greatly both to movies and television. And you can just look at his work in the two Kung Fu series. I believe people like yourself and myself and Jamie as well, who all grew up watching it, it really introduced us to the world of Kung Fu philosophy, the martial arts, and Eastern mysticism.
I heard he beat out Bruce Lee for that role, or took it away from him. I don't know. When I heard someone at work was telling me the story about Carradine's finding Carradine's body, which is just getting more and more weird as we go on, they were saying something that the producers were looking for somebody, or Bruce Lee was up for the role of Kane, but the producers at the last minute pulled out and chose David Carradine, who actually had no official Kung Fu training.
One other thing that was interesting was that despite the fact that he was, you know, legitimately and I guess in retrospect, obviously Caucasian, he was cast quite often as an Asian character, an Asian villain. You know, obviously he was cast as Chinese in Kung Fu, and yet I didn't see it. It was kind of odd that they would choose to do it that way. I guess at the time that Kung Fu was being produced, that was the kind of thing that they were doing. They're trying to get name actors rather than somebody with zero stage presence. It's odd that Bruce Lee and David Carradine would be up for a role and David Carradine would win. I'd like to think that wasn't racism involved, but it probably was, unfortunately. All right, let's move on to the headlines this week, including what's going on at the box office. A bit of a surprise this week.
We have repeat number one this week as Disney Pixar's Up lifted past the bona fide surprise hit The Hangover to be the first film of the summer to land a number one spot 2 weeks in a row. Early estimates from Hollywood.com say that Up has grossed an estimated $44.2 million versus The Hangover's $43.3 million. That's less than $1 million difference. Which will give Hangover a chance to possibly push past Up when the final numbers are released on Monday or later this week. Regardless of the final numbers, Up's estimated total gross in 2 weeks has been $137 million, placing it firmly in the upper echelon of Pixar earners. In third place was this week's other new release, Land of the Lost, which underperformed with $19.5 million, which is nowhere near Will Ferrell's best opening weekends and is about $11 million shy of the $30 million that the studio was hoping it would bring in this weekend. Of note this week was, in small release, was My Life in Ruins, which stars Nia Vardalos of My Big Fat Greek Wedding. It took in $3.2 million this weekend and just over 1,100 screens. Good enough for 8th place in the top 10, which is really good. And rounding out the top 5 was Night at the Museum, Battle of the Smithsonian, in 4th place with an additional $14.6 million, for a total of $127.3 million in 3 weeks. And Star Trek continues its run with another $8.4 million for 5th place, and grossing over $220 million since its release. Drag Me to Hell dropped to 7th place with $7.3 million, bringing its 2-week total to $28.5 million. And Angels and Demons slipped from 4th last week to 8th this week with $6.5 million in the U.S. box office, taking its U.S. total, North American total, to $116 million. But overseas, it continues to perform well as it has broken past $400 million in global earnings, making it the highest grossing film worldwide so far this year. And that's not a surprise to me. As I said, when Angels and Demons came out, it's going to do better overseas than it will in North America. It happened with Da Vinci Code, and that's no surprise to me. But first movie to do $400 million in, worldwide in 2009, that's pretty good.
Looks like a very healthy summer for the movies.
It's interesting. We were saying we've said all last month that June is the slow month, slower in comparison to May, and it is. But the top 5 movies this weekend, to add it up together, garnered $131 million. So that's pretty strong first weekend of June versus what came out last year this weekend, The Love Guru.
Yeah, it's funny how the way I see it is last year there were some huge hits and huge misses. You know, big successes like The Dark Knight and Iron Man, and huge bombs like The Love Guru. This year it seems to be like almost every movie's been, you know, a nice success. Nothing, you know, blowing the doors off the place. Star Trek certainly has been a big surprise. But Entertainment Weekly has made note that so far this year there hasn't been one movie that broke $300 million domestic. Star Trek may, but probably not. It just broke $200 million. And they were noting that there are really only 3 movies left in the calendar year that might have a hope of doing that. And that would be Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen, Harry Potter, and the
Half-Blood Prince.
Half-Blood Prince, thank you. And the James Cameron film Avatar that's coming out towards the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. There's also a small chance, but probably not because it's coming out the first weekend in November, is A Christmas Carol with Jim Carrey.
Right.
Holiday movies tend to bring in some good money. And, you know, they don't let us wait long past Halloween to know that Christmas is around the corner. But I just wanted to say, as well as Star Trek is doing, I have a feeling Harry Potter is going to be the number one movie this summer.
Right. It just very well might be, yeah. Now, that said, I think that DreamWorks is taking a more aggressive stance, especially when it comes to a movie that can also play in an IMAX theater. And they've already started selling tickets for their next big film, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, or as some people like to call it, giant, massive robots punching each other in the face. Tickets are now on sale on movietickets.com, Fandango, MoviePhone, and various other websites affiliated with different movie chains. While most people are usually quite casual when it comes to buying their tickets and picking out whether they're going to go see a movie, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen requires some extra effort. Tickets for movies like the ones made by director Chris Nolan or Michael Bay, a lot of these movies have shot sequences, like Transformers 2, in IMAX with IMAX cameras. So if you want to see the movie the way it should be seen, you need to see it in IMAX. And just like The Dark Knight, it's going to sell out quickly because there are only a few theaters with real IMAX screens. Buying tickets now will get you into opening day, but you probably shouldn't wait too much longer. And if you're geeks like us, we've already got our tickets.
I know. I should do that.
Yes, you probably should.
But I don't really need to see. I will eventually see it in IMAX, but you know what? You know what's going to happen is with The Dark Knight. I know we tried a couple of times last year to see it in IMAX, and it was selling out, and it's gonna. And it seems like this could be the case with Transformers. I probably won't see it actually in IMAX until like the last weekend of summer.
Really?
Like,
oh, really?
Like The Dark Knight.
Oh, no, I'm going to see this.
I didn't see that till August.
Really? Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm a little skeptical about this one.
I think this one looks better than the first one. The running time is going to kill it, I think. 2 hours, 24 minutes for... Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. That will limit how many times it can show per screen. So, I mean, they'll get a little bit of a boost.
Shorter than Dark Knight. Dark Knight was like 3 hours.
That's true.
Right?
That's true. That's
but,
true.
Yeah, like,
but
yeah.
Overall, though, I mean, we've seen some fairly conservative running times for films so far this year. Star Trek's a nice, tight, I think, 124 minutes. Wolverine's like just over 90.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, Pixar movies tend to be around 90 minutes, that sort of thing. So, This looks like it's going to be one of the longer summer movies. I'm sure Harry Potter will be nice and long as well.
Well, for those of you who have missed Wolverine already and are looking for more X-Men stories...
Better X-Men stories.
Better X-Men. Yeah, that's right.
Wolverine's a good story. I don't know what they're going to do with this.
Well, director Bryan Singer, while he was doing the publicity rounds for the DVD release of Valkyrie, revealed that he is possibly interested in returning to the X-Men movie franchise with X-Men Origins Magneto. This looks like more work for Ian McKellen. Looking more and more likely that Singer won't be returning to the second Superman movie after the flawed Superman Returns, but the director is still fondly remembered for the two X-Men movies he directed, which were very, very good. Singer makes note, however, that the thematic quandary in directing Magneto will be that he's already done a couple of Nazi-themed movies, such as, of course, Pupil, again starring Ian McKellen, and Valkyrie, as well as the Magneto flashback in X-Men. Says Singer, "I've lived in that Nazi universe for quite a while. I just might need to take a little break before I do something like that." So you can tell that there's a strong relationship between Ian McKellen and Mr. Singer.
Oh, yeah, very strong. And it's interesting. I've often mentioned in one of the newer X-Men cartoons that they did a flashback episode that was a Wolverine Origins flashback episode where he was part of a Canadian contingent that set free Jewish people from a concentration camp, and he rescued a little boy from a building that was about to explode, and he put the little boy on the back of the truck, and the boy said, "Thank you, sir. My name is Eric," which is Magneto's real name.
Yeah, yeah.
So we know that from seeing Wolverine that Wolverine is ageless. He's been around forever.
That's right. Yeah.
And so he could very well have been had contact with Magneto. So if they wanted to tie a Wolverine Origins in there, that's something they could do. But it's true about the Nazi themed movies. I forgot Act Pupil. While it didn't take place during Nazi Germany, it was about Ian McKellen, a former SS officer. One of my favorite movies. Best really Brad movie. Renfro movie ever. Yeah. May he rest in peace.
Yeah.
And Valkyrie was good if it wasn't a German. No. Even with Tom Cruise. Yeah. If it wasn't supposed to be about Germans teaming plotting against Hitler, it would have been better. It's just that it was instead of. Like, there was no effort.
It was
made.
Based on true events, though.
Yes, it was based on true events, but Tom Cruise played a German officer and had an American accent.
Well, all the other Germans had English accents.
I know, exactly. So that's where they missed it was, you know, which should have, you know, they should have had them with Germans. But other than, if it wasn't for that, Valkyrie was okay.
There's a small kind of, I don't know, a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing going on here with current movies. The original director of Superman Returns... Like, hired, booked, pre-production, everything. It was McGee, the director of Terminator Salvation. And he quit slash was fired because he is incredibly afraid of flying. And they were going to shoot in Australia and did ultimately shoot Superman Returns in Australia. And he couldn't physically get on a plane. They shot Terminator Salvation in New Mexico. And he did get on a plane to see Christian Bale, but I think he had to take some pretty powerful
pills.
some tranquilizers there to get him there. So if Bryan Singer is out of a new Superman movie and we know that there are some, you know, preliminary plans for another one, would McGee be back on board? Or I wonder if they'll even entertain that idea or if they'll...
Not with Terminator Salvation.
Not with the box office, yeah. And yet there are plans for another Terminator film already. I heard a rumor today
Yeah.
About the next one being set in the UK. So I don't know what that's about.
Okay.
Kind of craziness. So I would welcome seeing a Magneto movie, but is that something that kids want to go see? Is that something that sells toys? You know, the current Wolverine movie has action figures and comic books and toy lines and everything else. I mean, this is a big part of movie marketing. Merchandising is a big moneymaker. And especially when it comes to a superhero movie like this, is everyone ready to see, you know, an elderly superhero carry a movie? Is that possible? Can that work? I don't know.
If you're Bryan Singer. But okay,
he's not a hero, though. He's kind of a villain, too.
Other things that need to be factored in is right now Ian McKellen's tied up with the Hobbit movies.
That's true.
And actually, that was the only thing.
Well, that's going to that's gonna take a little time.
Yeah. Anyway, so we're going to move on to some television casting news. There's very little on the TV front right now. As we know, it is summertime, and it is all about the movies. Shows are about to or already have started filming their next seasons. I've got a couple of casting news stories here about a couple of popular television shows. And first off is Robert Knepper is joining the cast of Heroes. Fresh off his role as Teabag Bagwell in Prison, Theodore Teabag Bagwell, hence Teabag from Prison Break, Knepper has been cast to be the new lead villain on Heroes next season. And he'll appear in at least 6 episodes of the series, which of the series is 4th season, where he'll play Samuel, a Jim Jones-type charismatic but evil with a twisted sense of humor. Heroes is slated to return in the fall in a new time slot, which is 8 p.m. on Mondays. The sci-fi drama, which enjoys a strong online following, will share its time period with another fan favorite, Chuck, which is slated to come back in mid-season, which I have something to say about that in a minute. Knepper is perhaps best known for playing Teabag on Prison Break, who was a murderer, a rapist, and a supremacist. But on the big screens, he's recently appeared in Transporter 3 and The Day the Earth Stood Still. Teabag is definitely the villain you loved to hate on Prison Break, and he was so devious in Season 1, but kind of got a little gimmicky in later seasons. I just wanted to say, on the quick Chuck note, I know that Heroes, like Chuck, was picked up for 13 episodes, which is a half season, so they're going to play Heroes from September to January. And then they're going to put Chuck in January to May and at 8 p.m. on Mondays, and that's going to put it up against 24. So that's like a kiss of death for Chuck. And, you know, there was such fan backlash in the fact that it was almost canceled and NBC is pulling another stupid move and, you know, going with a, you know, something that's not going to fare well for a really good show versus Heroes, which everybody was complaining about, but they've given it kind of an extra life. because of a bunch of writing changes and promises that it will return to its season one foundation. So I just wanted to say, I'm disappointed because Chuck's going to conflict with 24 for me.
One thing I'm going to make note of just for our Canadian listeners is that Global here in Canada is actually doing a big shakeup with Heroes and Brothers and Sisters, where they're actually going to move Heroes to Sunday night at 10 and moving Brothers and Sisters over to Monday. So that will actually allow Canadians to watch Heroes one night early. And that's happened once or twice before with popular TV shows that that originally were simulcasting both in the U.S. and Canada, and now they're not. So it's the kind of thing where I guess people who are blogging a lot and making comments on the internet better not spoil Heroes for the 7 fans that are left watching it. Anyway.
All right, moving on. Next casting news, another quick one here, is that on the heels of his co-starring role on another canceled Fox show, Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles, Brian Austin Green is in talks to join One Tree Hill as a regular in the fall. On the series, which will enter its 7th season, he would play Clayton, a brash sports agent who represents Nathan Scott's, who's played by James Lafferty's, basketball interests, and has become a close friend, ally, business partner, and advisor to him, while also enjoying the spoils that come from being a wealthy, handsome, single guy. This is big news for One Tree Hill, as the upcoming season marks a major transition for the show, which recently lost two of its original cast members in Chad Michael Murray and Hilary Burton. And, of course, those of us who go back to the 90s know that Green made his name as a teen idol in the 90s when he played David Silver on Beverly Hills 90210. So it's a return to the teen angsts for Brian Austin Green after playing a really cool badass.
I'm almost afraid to say it, but I'm a big fan of Bag, Brian Austin Green. Because his role and his performance, his overall turn on Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles was really surprisingly good.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the high points, I think, for that show. And say it with me now, the show was just getting good when it got canceled. So I boo the fact that Terminator the Sarah Connor Chronicles is canceled. In fact, at one point, it was, I think, better than than a lot of stuff that was airing as far as hour-long scripted action-type shows. So is this maybe a move to keep the hunky guy factor on the show now that Chad Michael Murray's gone? The Brian Austin Green, he's a decent-looking dude. Is that what you think they're doing?
Probably.
Exchanging one piece of beefcake for another?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Let's see if it works. I think if anybody can pull it off, he probably could. Let's get back into some movie news. We're gonna stay geeky here, really geeky here. A story here about geek god Peter Jackson, of course, director of the signature fanboy trilogy, The Lord of the Rings. He's making his first appearance at Comic-Con next month, according to the New York Times. Jackson's gonna be at the San Diego convention on July 24th to support South African director Neil Blomkamp's District 9. Which is an extraterrestrial Among Us thriller that he produced and that's due for release in theaters in August. The New York Times is reporting that the overextended Jackson has a brief gap in his schedule, allowing this particular visit to Comic-Con. Those studios have gone to Comic-Con to promote his previous films like The Rings Trilogy and 2005's King Kong. Jackson himself has been squirreled away in his New Zealand editing bay, finishing those particular films. So I can imagine just Comic-Con is just gigantic as it is anyway, and a lot of film studios are realizing this and making a strong presence. They had a huge presence last year. So I can't imagine what the turnout will be with Peter Jackson there. It's going to be huge.
It's going to be huge. And, so he's not directing, but he's producing the Hobbit movies. We were just mentioning that Ian McKellen's busy with the Hobbit movies. Mm-hmm. It's going to be about to be. And so, yeah, brief appearance by Peter Jackson. That's a good thing.
And this District 9 looks like a really intriguing movie.
Yeah.
If you go to YouTube and look for a movie called...
I don't remember.
Is it called like Alive in J-Town or Alive in J-ville? It's going to confuse me now. Anyway, this District 9 is based on a short film that Neil Blomkamp produced and is online, and it's really quite well done with special effects and everything. He was originally tapped, as we talked before, to direct a movie based on the super popular video game Halo, but it never gelled and never completed.
And District 9 looks like it's going to be maybe a hidden gem this summer.
Yeah.
It's coming out in August, and I'm already seeing ads at bus stops.
Yeah, it's kind of like...
and they're nice little ads. Yeah, they're like, a little no bit, humans here or something like that.
Yeah, it's a little bit like the ad campaign and the marketing they did for Cloverfield.
Cloverfield, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so viral marketing is proven successful for Dark Knight, for Cloverfield, for Watchmen. So I'm more and more getting curious about this. And the trailer itself is something, if you haven't seen it, it's like a documentary. You think you're watching a documentary, yeah. and then suddenly...
You don't even realize it's about aliens for a while until you see a flying saucer above Johannesburg.
I'll be back. Yeah. Arnold Schwarzenegger promised this in the Terminator movies. But since he became governor, I guess he's reneging. But his filmography is quickly becoming one of the most mined resources for remakes and sequels. First up, for Schwarzenegger's legacy, there's the news that Columbia has chosen Total Recall remake writer Kurt Wimmer, and the writer-director who is behind Equilibrium and Ultraviolet, and the scripter behind in-production projects Salt, which stars Angelina Jolie, and Law Abiding Citizen, which stars Jamie Foxx and Gerard Butler. Next up is a report of Robert Rodriguez, who has a supposed interest for Schwarzenegger reprising his Dutch Schaefer role for Predators as a cameo. That's the Predator sequel Rodriguez is producing, scheduled for a July 2010 release. And finally, there's a rumor that 1985's Commando is being eyed for the remake treatment as well. So, Arnold, how can you go away? How can we miss you when you won't go away, right?
Are these movies even old enough to be remade? I mean, already with some of these? I don't think
You know what? I think the rule is if the movie's 25 years old, you can remake it.
Is that what it? Oh, God.
Commando,
oh.
1985, Predator.
Oh, my God. Well, they air Commando all the time on Spike. Every 5 days, it seems Commando's on.
Well, Predator, I didn't know about this Predator isn't really a remake. It's a sequel. Predators.
Yeah.
I wonder who they're going to get to play Schwarzenegger's character, but Robert Rodriguez. But it's another story.
Governor Schwarzenegger has always said that he would not do movies while he's in office. He simply can't. So I don't know what kind of. I mean, I think this could just be Robert Rodriguez, putting it out there in public to see what kind of reaction it's going to get. I didn't know that Kurt Wimmer was doing Total Recall. That scares the heck out of me, because although I quite liked Equilibrium, I thought Ultraviolet was a super stylized mess.
Total Recall is just creepy.
Yeah, and it doesn't need to be remade. I mean, how could you? I mean, remaking a Paul Verhoeven movie? What's the point? I mean, they're already way over the top. So what are you going to do, make a subdued version of Total Recall?
This is just the latest in Hollywood's lack of new things to do, to come up with, new ideas, So right now, remakes or reimaginings are the thing. And if you can remake past hits, such as they've been doing with mostly horror movies at the point.
Now they're even doing Footloose and things like that.
Yeah, they've moved on to musicals. They're going to move on to the action movies. That wasn't Arnold who was in Terminator Salvation, in case anybody was wondering,
CGI, boys and girls, CGI.
He's not that young anymore.
No. It's funny. It was kind of cool that they made him look like the circa 1984 Arnold Schwarzenegger, whatever, with the bad hair and everything.
So it's just another story of they can't come up with something new, so they work with what worked before and try to make it better, in their own vision.
And when they do get something good and original, they milk it till it's dry, right?
Like what they're doing with. Yes, everything comes in threes.
Yes, like what they're doing with The Haunting in Connecticut.
Oh, good segue.
I tried.
You tried. You know what? That's right. The Haunting in Connecticut opened in March to a surprising $23 million its opening weekend, making it successful. For that time of year. So it's no surprise that Lionsgate is developing the concept of a trilogy. like A Haunting in Connecticut, there's planned movies for A Haunting in New York and A Haunting in Georgia.
I want to see A Haunting in Detroit, A Haunting in the Bronx.
I want to see A Haunting in Brooklyn. Toronto.
Haunting in Washington.
I'm
the ghost of Richard Nixon.
So these movies will be based on episodes from the paranormal series called A Haunting, which can be seen on the Discovery Channel. Haunting in New York will be about a single mother whose mentally handicapped daughter appears able to communicate with spirits, while A Haunting in Georgia will tell the tale of a four-year-old girl with imaginary friends whom the girl's parents suspect might be evil ghosts when their daughter wakes with claw marks across her face. In both stories, families turn to paranormal experts. Given Lionsgate's love for extending horror franchises for as long as possible, hence the Saw 5 movies, this might just be the tip of the iceberg. Maybe in 2049, your kids will be talking about plans for The Haunting in New Hampshire and The Haunting in Nebraska. Ha 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 ha. That's not my quote. That's from the story. So I just wanted to say, The Haunting in Connecticut's about to come out on DVD. I really did enjoy that movie. I was surprised at how eerily creepy that movie was, you know, despite whatever they say on Rotten Tomatoes. But again, you know, if something's good, they're going to milk it for as much as they can, as we've already said. And, you know, I'll just have to wait and see what the trailers do. The thing that I liked about Connecticut was it was loosely inspired by true events, right? And that's what drew me in. That and the opening sequences was just creepy. Anyways. Ooh. Dead bodies. That's all I'm saying. Opening sequences. Pictures of dead bodies.
Well, tonight, in just about an hour's time from New York, we have the Tony Awards. And it's a real collection of stars of both the screen and TV who are making it to the stage as nominees and presenters. And among the presenters that we'll see and nominees, there's Edie Falco, of course, from The Sopranos, and Will Ferrell, who is actually nominated for Best Special Theatrical Event, facing competition from Liza Minnelli. I understand it was called a commie. But so that should be an interesting matchup. Will Ferrell actually made his Broadway debut this season in the one-man show You're Welcome, America, A Final Evening with George W. Bush. And I'm told that it was quite...
He does such a good Bush on Saturday Night Live. So good. Sorry.
And also, we have Jane Fonda. She's returning to Broadway for the first time in 46 years. And she's nominated for her performance in 33 Variations, a new play. Also, on the show will be James Gandolfini. He's on Broadway this season in God of Carnage. And of course, we know him from The Sopranos. Also, there's Anne Hathaway and Nicole Kidman, who, of course, starred on Broadway in 1998 in David Harris' The Blue Room. And she's, of course, not doing that much stage anymore, but she'll be a presenter. She's going to be in the musical Nine, which is based on the 1982 Tony Award-winning Best Musical, which is being directed by Rob Marshall, who, of course, won the Oscar for Chicago. Then we have Jessica Lange and Frank Langella, who, although he got shut out at the Oscars, did win the Tony for the stage production of Frost Nixon, in which he, of course, plays Richard Nixon. On the show will be David Hyde Pierce from The Fraser Show. There's also Susan Sarandon. She's returned to Broadway this year in Exit the King. And there's, of course, John Stamos. He's a veteran stage actor who appeared on Broadway in Nine, Cabaret, and How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. And that's about it, gentlemen. It should be a really exciting show. It's interesting that Shrek, which is a musical based on a movie, has several nominations, and as well as Billy Elliot, a musical based on a movie, has 50 nominations, which ties the record of nominations with The Producers. And we'll see if it ties the amount of Tonys won by The Producers. I can't recall how many that was, but Billy Elliot is actually one of the front runners.
I think it's really interesting that a lot of these a lot of these actors and a lot of these productions are using more people that were involved in film and television than ever. Dennis, I know you have a lot of experience with stage actors and know that for the longest time, and maybe even still a little bit today, the idea of a stage actor doing television or film was just gauche and lowbrow. How dare you? And now those lines are completely gone. And you look at this list of presenters, you look at the people that are nominated, who would have thought that Will Ferrell will be nominated for a Tony Award for doing his impersonation of Bush, no less, and up against somebody like Liza Minnelli? It's almost a joke. And you've got Neil Patrick Harris hosting, you know, from How I Met Your Mother and Doogie Howser, M.D. I mean, a lot of these actors, you know, choose to do a lot of theater, and that's fantastic, and it's great, and it brings people into Broadway, into other theater markets. But certainly the idea that a television or film actor doing Broadway and vice versa is no longer the taboo it used to be.
And it's also interesting to see now that there's a bit of a transition happening where we're used to seeing movies being made that are based on musicals, such as Chicago or The Producers, which is based on something, which is based on something, which is based on to another thing. I had a better thought than that, but it's Sweeney Todd. That's the other one I was trying to think of. So it is an interesting transition that's happening right now. There's to be mentioned things that Chris Pine, who's played Kirk this in Star Trek this year, is he's about to do his Broadway premiere, and I think a little bit of credit needs to, I don't know, maybe not, maybe it's just me. We all know Hugh Jackman was originally before Wolverine. He was a stage actor, musical, in Oklahoma. So it's just interesting to see that, you know, there's this change happening where movies and TV stars are now mixing in with traditional theater.
Well, and Hugh Jackman is joining up with Mr. Bond, Daniel Craig. They're playing Chicago Cops, so they're coming to Broadway soon. But I think what it is, first of all, for the actors, they like to keep their chops fresh by having to do roles 8 performances a week. It's one thing to do a movie where you hit your mark, you say your lines, and it's on film forever. But they have to recreate their roles frequently, and it's a way of keeping their art alive. But also, it's a great way of marketing Broadway. I mean, the Tony Awards are notorious for not having a wide viewership on TV. So to get these names is to attract the viewers who are attracted by their celebrity status. Nicole Kidman hasn't been on Broadway for several years, but still she lends her star quality to give added stellar luster to the show. And you have... Also, it's important for Broadway itself, the theaters, to attract audiences, especially in the tight economic times. And the stars will do that. It's in the old days, there used to be a Broadway star system, but now the star system seems to be manufactured not so much by Broadway, but by the movies and TV. And it's interesting that when Rosie O'Donnell was doing her talk show, she used to focus on Broadway quite a bit and have excerpts from the shows. I mean, now it's not that they don't have that many outlets. Regis and Kelly, Freud slipped here.
Whoa, you're going back like 15 years.
Yeah, Regis and Kelly have featured Hair and West Side Story, for example, on their programs. And it's really interesting because people from throughout North America who see those shows will, when in New York, likely pick up those shows as something to do.
I just wanted to quickly just mention one thing: is it's also for actors who may be seen as typecast because they're playing a certain role so much in movies or on television. It's good. I think it's refreshing. I think they like to go to the stage in between shoots. Just to kind of show that they can do more than just Wolverine or James Bond with Daniel Craig now. And I just wanted to kind of point out that despite the controversy, Daniel Radcliffe is getting praise for his role his performances in Equus, and it's producers who are kind of curious about seeing this kid who's only ever played Harry Potter except for one movie with where he didn't even have a line, where he was in with the Tailor of Panama before Harry Potter.
Was he really in Tailor of Panama?
He was Pierce Brosnan's son.
Oh,
he didn't have a line, I don't think.
Not a popular movie either.
But the praise that he was getting for playing such a dark, emotionally scarred or traumatic character, it's kind of led him to, you know, possibilities post Harry Potter. I mean, right now he's filming the last of the two Harry Potter movies, so it's just kind of interesting. I mean, he's done things like there was a movie called December Boys, and he did another one. I can't remember which one, but it's you know, it's kind of a way to stretch their legs so that they can do more than one thing.
Okay, so our last story is something that up until a few years ago wasn't really necessary, but we're going to be doing a summer TV review of all the new and returning shows that you can expect to see on television this summer. This is a fairly new phenomenon. Up until recently, summer was the dregs of television, Rerun Central.
You know what got it started? Sorry, I cut you off.
Some sort of strike, I imagine.
No.
No?
The OC.
The OC.
It premiered in July.
Right, that's right.
I'm just saying.
Now,
No comments from the peanut gallery, it
used to be the case where television networks just automatically assumed that nobody watched television. And in a lot of respects, that's true. People take vacations. The viewership is down a little bit. But that doesn't mean that there's no one watching and that there's no advertising money to be made. So what do they need to do? Well, they probably need to produce shows, you know, in some respects that are less expensive. And what does that mean? More reality than ever. So
this week, this year's a little bit different. There is still some good scripted shows out there, but there is going to be a lot of reality out there. You know, I think they're doing another Amazing Race. Gone is Last Comic Standing. Back is Big Brother.
Right.
But I mean, there are some good shows. I mean, in recent years, we've seen successes in Mad Men and Entourage, Breaking Bad. You know, these are all shows that came and premiered in the summer. So what we're going to look at is some shows that have already premiered and some that haven't yet. Some are new, some are returning. Okay. So we're going to start off with some of the new shows that are coming up. And this one's kind of, like I just said, it's new, but it's returning. Big Brother 11 is back, and it's going to be back for 3 episodes a week. Plus, it will have a live internet stream, so making it a very serious time commitment. That premieres in July. Also premiering is a new show, More to Love, which promises a dating show for the rest of us. What is that? More to Love.
More to Love. That's obviously, it sounds to me like it's probably people who might have a bit of a weight problem. There's more to love. That's what I think it must be.
Funny.
I hate to say it.
That premieres July 28th on Fox. That means they don't look good in bathing suits either. Yes. One that I just saw a commercial for when I was watching The Listener this past week, also a new show on NBC, Canadian Made. Very disappointed. Slightly disappointed. I'll give it a little more time. But I saw commercials for Merlin.
Really? I'm looking forward to that.
This is coming out, premiering June 21st on NBC. Tells the tale of, a young Merlin and a young King Arthur, who was actually a prince at this time. New this week, this summer, is Nurse Jackie, which premieres on June 8th on Showtime. The buzz is big for Edie Falco's new show. It's about a brilliant emergency room nurse who has a weakness for Vicodin. Doesn't that sound familiar? is The Good Family, which premiered on May 27th on ABC. It's created by Mike Judge. And is a new animated series about an eco-obsessive family.
I didn't hear about this at all, actually. It kind of premiered under the radar a little bit, I think.
We've also got The Philanthropist, which premieres June 24th on NBC. Stars former Rome star James Purfoy as a heroic it's a heroic adventures of a billionaire playboy turned vigilante philanthropist.
I saw a preview for this morning. It looks pretty interesting.
What else was there? And yeah, The Listener. There was something else I saw a commercial for. I can't remember what. But overall, you know, so those are some of the top scripted, except for Big Brother, shows that are coming out in the summer.
Returning for an additional season this summer, A whole bunch of different shows from all sorts of different networks, including Burn Notice on the USA Network, returned last week. Army Wives debuts tonight on Lifetime with a new season. Kathy Griffin, My Life on the D-List, another season on Bravo. And the reason why I wanted to mention this is because this time she's traveling the globe to seek advancement advice from more famous friends, which means sure to be memorable guest spots from Suzanne Summers, from Bette Midler, Gloria Estefan, Cher, Rosie O'Donnell. That might be interesting to see. I'm sure that's going to make Joel McHale's The Soup. Showtime has a big premiere coming up on June 8th. Weeds premieres for, I believe it's season 5, actually. Lady Issues, especially that baby bump that Nancy is sporting, are going to be a big issue on season 5, as is the casting of Alanis Morissette as her OBGYN. The Closer has another season on June 8th on TNT. Of course, that's Kira Sedgwick's police drama. And a show for HBO that's getting a lot of popularity, I think, because of the newfound popularity of vampire-themed TV shows and movies. True Blood gets a second season, debuting June 14th on HBO. Of course, that's the big show that stars Anna Paquin. Entourage gets another season on HBO on July 12th. And this one is centered on Vince's new Martin Scorsese film, Gatsby. But we'll also see Eric debating whether to get a place of his own, and Lloyd battling with Ari about a promotion. I hear that Lloyd, played by Rex Lee, this is going to be his last season. The Real Housewives of Atlanta premieres July in on the Bravo. Before we saw the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills and the Real Housewives of New Jersey, I should say. So this will be another version of the Real Housewives series. And last but not least, Mad Men gets another season on AMC sometime in August. Notoriously tight-lipped Mad Men creator Matt Weiner told Entertainment Weekly magazine last month that the upcoming season is about how people respond to change. So beyond that, spoilers are pretty slim. Don's promiscuous mother will make a couple of appearances in flashbacks, and Betty's baby is indeed Don's, despite her fling. So that's what's happening for the highlights of summer television, but we're always welcome to hear what you think. So if you've got some opinion on what's happening in the movies and television this summer and what's coming up in the fall and even the holiday season, why not drop us a line? You can email us at moviesandtvcast@gmail.com. You can also make comments on our blog at moviesandtvcast.blogspot.com, narrated by Aaron on a regular basis with all the latest of movie and television news. That should wrap things up, I think, for this episode of Inside Movies and TV. Number 61 is in the can. Thank you very much for listening, and stay tuned for our next episode of Inside Movies and TV.